I have empathy. Look at my empathy. Look at what I'm doing.
Yeah, yeah.
You see this?
Yeah.
You don't have empathy than you.
Dear Shandy. Welcome back to Dear Shandy, listeners. Hello, Andy.
Hello.
How are you today?
Doing good.
Doing good.
Yeah. Well, yeah. We have a great guest today.
We do have a great guest, a very exciting guest, a guest who, just before we started rolling, we asked her where she was and she said Venice Beach, and you touched your stomach and she said, oh, why'd you touch your stomach? And you're like, I didn't know I touched my stomach. And then we were like, oh my God, maybe there was meaning in that, because our guest today is highly intuitive. Mm-hmm. She is, I think, the creme de la creme of empaths in the world. She is a board certified psychiatrist, an intuitive healer, and the New York Times bestselling author of several books, including 2010's Emotional Freedom, Liberate Yourself from Negative Emotions and Transform Your Life, 2017's The Empath's Survival Guide, Life Strategies for Sensitive People, and the brand new, hot off the press, is The Genius of Empathy, Practical Skills to Heal Your Sensitive Self, Your Relationships, and the World. And by the way, no big deal, the foreword is by the Dalai Lama.
Oh, I know.
Just that throwing guy. That one in there. No. We are so thrilled today to be joined by Dr. Judith Orloff. Thank you so much.
Welcome.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
To be honest, empathy is a topic that I have been dancing around, mm-hmm. broaching. We've been doing this podcast for 3.5 years now, and I think empathy is woven into just about every topic we end up covering, yeah. honestly. But it's a slippery little feeling or emotion. I mean, I don't even know what to describe it as. What would you describe it?
It's a healing force that you can tap into by opening up your heart. You open up your empathy. So you heal yourself, you can heal your relationships and send that empathy out to the world. So it's a healing energy. It's not just a nice thing to do or being polite. It's about how to really connect with what's best in yourself, you know, the loving, empathic, caring part of you that sometimes gets squashed in the world. But it's this book helps you to develop that. So every single day, empathy can be a practice.
And do you feel that when you say out in the world, do you feel that there is less empathy today than there was, say, 10 years ago, 20 years ago? What's your thought on the status of empathy today?
It seems like it.
Yeah, it does seem like it. I was wondering if you had a different perspective.
Yeah, people are fighting each other. They're going to war. You know, they haven't learned any lessons, about empathy. And I start the book with a quote by Rumi, who is the poet of love. Mm-hmm. And it's out beyond any ideas of wrongdoing or right doing. There is a field. I will meet you there. Mm-hmm. And that's what I want this book to be. I don't want it to be about belief systems or who's right and who's wrong. I just want to begin again to bring us together in that neutral field to begin to appreciate each other.
So before we get going, I just have a quick disclaimer, and that is that today's conversation is meant more as anecdotal guidance and is not intended to substitute professional mental health counseling, diagnosis, or treatment, despite how qualified our guest is today. So Dr. Orloff, let's start with a very clear definition of empath and empathy, and what is the difference between empathy and compassion? Because I do think those two get confused a lot.
Well, I think of it as a spectrum where you have in the middle, you have regular empathy, which is so beautiful, which is I feel for what you're going through and it matters to me. And then a little bit higher on the spectrum, you have highly sensitive people who are very sensitive to noise, smells, sounds, crowds, and then higher up on the spectrum, you have the empath who is sensitive to everything and tends to be an emotional sponge who absorbs energy and emotions from other people and the world. Then the very lowest on the spectrum are the narcissists, sociopaths, and psychopaths who have what I call empathy deficient disorder, meaning they're not wired to have empathy as we know it. So unfortunately, empaths and sensitive people often are attracted to these people. And I devoted a chapter to teaching them how to discern who they are and how not to get involved if possible.
What a dirty little world we live in where that can be the case.
That is really just so cruel. What a cruel
nature.
Yes.
And the indifferent cruelty of nature to put those two together.
Yeah.
Ugh.
What are your thoughts What are your thoughts on the term empath becoming more mainstream? I mean, you've been writing about empathy for a very long time, but I feel like in the past couple of years, it's become very like sort of a hot button word to throw around. What are your thoughts on that? Do you think it's helpful, harmful?
Oh, I think it's enormously helpful. I wrote my book, The Empath Survival Guide, in 2017. So that was at a time when the word empath wasn't really known in the general culture. And I was a little concerned about whether to use it, if people would actually know what it was. But then it just popped open and, you know, everyone's an empath now. There's so many people. And so many people contact me and say, I didn't know what it was that I had, but now I know. Thank you. Mm-hmm. And so it's a very beautiful thing to have empathy and being an empath, or just to have empathy. But you have to learn how to set boundaries with it so you don't absorb the stress of other people and the world.
Yeah, that definitely came up a lot. Whenever we have on a guest like yourself, we poll our listeners, who we call our Shandies, to ask them for questions. And we will get to that one, the boundary laying, because I think that is particularly tough for someone who is naturally empathic.
It also can take away the joy from your life.
Yes.
Like I often find sometimes when I'm really happy, I'm like, oh, wow, this is a moment. Like I'm living the best part of my life. Suddenly I'll be like, oh, but there are people suffering and miserable and lonely everywhere. And then it'll ruin it for me.
No, but that's the nature of humanity, though. We have suffering and we have joy. It's if you fight that, it's going to cause you a lot of pain.
Well, we'll get to it. Sorry. My personal experience.
So what do you think are the biggest misconceptions about empathy?
That you have to give 100% of the time, and that you always have to be in empathic mode, and you have to be on call for your friends. Something happens, you're the one they call and talk to for 2 hours. And that's so wrong. You know, you don't have to do that. And it's not healthy to do that. That's more codependent giving. It's not healthy giving. You feel good about it. You might be tired from it, but you feel good about it, something good. But to give constantly and be a martyr, many people are trained as they're growing up to be a martyr because that's how you can be compassionate. And it's just not true. It's the worst way to be. I mean, if I was a martyr, I'd never be here talking to you because I'd be so tired. I'd want to be at home in bed. Mm-hmm. You know, being a martyr isn't a healthy role model. Being balanced is a healthy role model. To give when you can, to know when to say, no, I don't have it right now. I wish I did, but I don't have it. I just have to be quiet and alone. Mm-hmm. And be able to set that up so that people will feel disappointed. This is the big thing with empaths. They're so afraid of people being disappointed. And it's just about maturing that you will disappoint people sometimes. Mm-hmm. It's true. No, I can't do this right now. I'm so sorry. But this is the nature of being an empower empath, is learning how to express empathy when you can and learning when you don't have it to give.
So a people pleaser would fall in the Venn diagram of empath, I assume. And someone with imposter syndrome might also fall in the Venn diagram of empath. Uh-huh. Okay.
Okay. So in your opinion, there is sort of an overlap between those traits. What surprised me actually when reading your book was about how overthinking also came into play. Like I don't think I really saw that. If I'm honest, when I first started reading your book, I thought it was more about like, you know, just feeling for others. And sometimes, you know, I know that I often take it on too much to the point where I feel drained, and therefore I have become a little more like withdrawn because I do find it so exhausting. And so I cannot express how perfectly timed this book was in my life for like the chapter I'm in right now. So the overthinking, the people pleasing, all this stuff played so much more of a role in this than I initially believed.
Oh yes. And that can sap your joy. To be a people pleaser and have the need to everyone be happy all the time. You know, empaths are often like that, where they just want everyone to be happy. They want everyone to be healed. I mean, I feel the same way. I wish I could heal everybody. You know, I wish I could take away your pain and everyone in the world, but healing doesn't work that way. Each person has to do their own path and, you know, have their own growth. Mm-hmm. And so it's important, you know, so you don't become drained, is to learn how to give in a happy way when you feel like it, not when you're so overburdened or the situation is so huge that it's going to drain you. Mm-hmm. But some situations are bigger than others. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think you've gotten involved with some pretty big situations. Mm-hmm. And so it's important to, you know, be kind to yourself and withdraw sometimes to replenish.
It's interesting what you just said. You said when you feel like it. And in your book, of course, it's a famous line, you know, no is a full sentence.
That's right.
When you feel like it, can you expand on that a bit? Because let's say you have a friend who's going through a hard time and you don't really feel like, you know, like maybe you're not really in that place, but they're coming to you.
Right.
Where's that line between being a present friend for someone who needs you and maybe has come to rely on you in that way and being like, okay, but actually not today?
Well, great, great question. One thing we don't want to become for our friends is their therapist.
Mm.
You don't want to get into that habit. That's yeah. not mm-hmm. a healthy way to be with your friends.
Yeah.
And sometimes you might be able to say, you know, I could listen for 5 minutes, but then I'm going to have to go. But I will listen to you for the 5 minutes. And if you want to talk about solutions, that's one thing. But friends often go around in circles, you know, and they keep, you know, without a solution. And so with those people, I usually limit it to a few minutes. And I say, if you want to talk about solutions, then we can set up a time if you're really interested in that. Or you can go to a therapist. Here's a name. No, but I don't have any problem saying I'm not your therapist. I've had plenty of patients in my practice, mm-hmm. you know, and I think it's a healthy thing to say that. It's otherwise, they're going to be coming out of the woodwork.
That's spoken like a therapist.
Yeah, someone who's been there.
I'm going to be honest. I don't know if in a friendship, I would have the balls to be like, I'm not your therapist.
I haven't said it, but I've extracted from two relationships where I was the therapist.
Yes, same. I've sort of like had to remove myself.
Yeah,
exactly. But you don't have to remove yourself. You see, that's the thing. You could run scared and just get out of all those relationships or learn how to set healthy, loving boundaries.
Okay.
Running scared is much easier, though.
Okay, so then I think you gave great examples just now, like, okay, I have 5 minutes where we could set a time or coming out and saying I'm not your therapist. But in general, because this did come up so much with our questions, what are some tips for generally guiltlessly drawing those boundaries? Because chances are, if you have that kind of dynamic with a friend or even an acquaintance, it's because there's some sort of precedent set oftentimes by you that you right. are available for them in that way when they want it at the drop of a hat.
Exactly. Exactly. So you set the pattern. And so breaking the pattern sometimes isn't always easy. So you have to keep repeating yourself. And you can say to somebody, you know, I'm really working on self-care now. And, you know, I notice that I give so much, I get so tired. And so I just need to limit it a little bit and focus it. And I hope you understand that. And it isn't that I don't love you. It's that I'm, you know, making this change in myself. So listen to the tone of my voice when I say it, because you don't want to be pleading with them or making excuses or drawing it out in a long way. You want to just say, you know, I'm sorry, I can't. And if they say, well, what kind of friend are you? You know, and you can say, I'm a really good friend. You know, I am. I love you, but I've got to do this for myself. And it would mean so much to me for you to respect that.
Ooh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh,
dropping the hammer.
Goodness.
I like
that
it.
That's a very gentle dropping of the hammer right there.
Yeah.
It is. It's gentle. It's not, you're not hitting them over the head with anything. You know, you're not confronting them. You're saying a positive no with love.
Yeah, that's great.
What I like too is that really you made it more about yourself. These are the boundaries I'm drawing for me. It's not that I'm not your therapist. It's not that I can't listen to you anymore.
Your problems are still meaningful. I have issues that I need to address.
Yeah.
Yes. Ooh,
I suspect that takes years to refine.
No, it doesn't.
Really?
I recommend for my patients, but in the book, just make a script. Find a friend, choose an easier one, not like your mother. You know, and just, or any, whatever the hardest one is. People always go right to their mothers, and that's a mistake, you know. But you choose a really easy one. And then at home, you have a script of what you're going to say when they call you and want to talk for a really long time. And so you could practice with each other and practice your tone of voice and don't be scared. You know, it's okay to do this, you know, and if you don't have that already ingrained in you, you have to learn that it's healthy, it's okay, and you could do it in a loving way. Mm-hmm. And so you come up with a script, you know, saying, you know, I'd love to listen for about 5 minutes and then I've got to go right now. And I hope that helps.
Are our reactions to that surprising? Because I feel like we're having kind of like, oh my God, I don't know if I could do that reaction.
It's scary. Even though I think most people would be scared to do that.
I mean, to me, I hear that and I'm like, it sounds like, obviously I agree with you. That sounds like something one should be able to do, especially with someone who is a friend, right? If this person's a friend enough that they're seeking advice or empathy from you, then they should respect that you need a little space. But I don't know why it's like, it reminds me of the platonic friendship episode. Mm-hmm. We had someone on to talk about platonic friendships and like the idea that you need a break from a friendship. The directness is very scary for some reason.
Yeah, it is. So you have to start out very small and easy. Pick something just very small. Like I can't go to the movie tonight. And I'm so sorry. No, that's and say that and do what you just did, the way you're smiling and your face is glowing. Just say it from that point of view.
She makes it sound so easy.
Rocket, rocket money. Rocket, rocket money. Rocket money is the place to get the money back that you never thought you had.
That you never thought you had. How about the money that you had that you didn't know you were spending?
That's better. Okay, let's sing that.
Because Rocket Money is the personal finance app that helps you find and cancel unwanted subscriptions. Then they let you cancel them with one tap. One tap.
One tap.
When all these companies, they are not making it easy for you. They're like, oh, here's a free trial. You know, come join us. And then suddenly they're like,
we'll cancel it. But yeah, exactly. Here you go. Here's something else that you're going to have to cancel again.
Yes. Good luck finding the page where you do that. Nearly 75% of people have subscriptions they have forgotten about entirely. Monthly, this little amount just sneaking out, bleeding out of your credit card every month. That you completely forgotten about.
It's ridiculous.
Money thrown on the ground.
It's a big chunk of the economy.
Yes.
That's not real. That's not what America is about. America is not about getting crumbs.
Yeah.
They shouldn't get that money. That should be your money that you can spend on other sundries.
Sundries.
Yes. Goods and services.
They have 5 million users and have saved their users $500 million in canceled subscriptions and $740 a year when using all their features. And it monitors your spending and helps lower your bills all in one place so you can grow your savings.
You know what they are? They're like a big district attorney who goes after the mafia. They're like, you know what? I'm going to take this on. And no one, that's scary. Everyone, you think these companies like Rocket Money?
No.
You think they're happy that Rocket Money's picking their pocket of money they didn't earn?
Yeah.
They don't deserve?
Yeah.
But Rocket Money has the guts.
Yes.
To go after them. So stop wasting money on things you don't use.
Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Shandy.
That's rocketmoney.com/Shandy. rocketmoney.com/Shandy.
Is empathy something we're born with? And how much of it is nature versus nurture?
Mm-hmm. Some people are born empaths, little babies. I, you know, through medical school, I would work in OBGYN, and some babies, when they come out, I don't know if you've seen it. Have you seen any births at all in little babies? They come out, some are giving and you know, exploring, and others are like little CEOs. They come out ready to conquer the world. Now they have different energies when they're born. And so there's a naturalness that happens when you're a baby, but also nurture plays a role too. If you have parents, well, my parents kept telling me I was overly sensitive and that that other people would think I was weird if I kept talking about my dreams that came true or my intuitions that I sensed about people. And so I grew up with that, you see, and so you sometimes have to get over old conditioning or see that it's not true. You know, it's obviously not true at this point in my life. I could say that, but it's important to be able to, you know yourself and be in your power with that.
Mm-hmm. Can one person really go from being not very empathic to very empathic?
It depends if they want what they want. Okay. You know, if you want to have a good relationship, you're going to want to do it. Because if you have a relationship without empathy, just imagine what that would be like.
Well, so as you know, we are a relationship podcast.
Yeah.
Several Shandies write saying that they felt their partner is not very empathic. How do they make their partner more empathic or want to be more empathic? Is that something that a partner can do for their partner in that way?
If they wanted to, maybe not as much as you would like, but more. Because some people, in the book, I talk about different kinds of empathy, and there's one kind called cognitive empathy, where certain people feel empathy through their minds.
Yeah.
And they're like attorneys and engineers and very linear people. They're just more comfortable up here. So they say, you know, oh, you know, I'm really, thank you for sharing that with me. I'm really with you on that. But they're not really coming from their hearts or anywhere else, but that's fine. And some people are limited to that. So if you happen to be in a relationship with somebody who mainly has cognitive empathy, they can develop that part a little more. But, you know, it's unlikely that they're going to develop their heart so much as an empath would.
So that's juicy.
So I'm just going to try to make an analogy here and you tell me if this works. So it's the difference between memorizing a piece on guitar or learning how to improvise that piece from your body.
Yeah.
Is that what you're saying? So in other words, you can teach someone to imitate empathic behavior in their minds, but it's very hard to teach someone to be an empath from their hearts.
It's cognitive empathy is real empathy. It's wonderful. I love having cognitive empathy. Mm-hmm. No, this isn't my only form because I'm an emotional empath and I'm an empath. But some people aren't, and they're beautiful, good, loving people. They just don't express empathy in the way you're talking about. And it just depends on a person's neurology, their makeup, you know, their upbringing. So it just depends. I would suggest going through the book and asking yourself, do I have cognitive empathy mainly? Do I have emotional empathy? Do I come from my heart and tend to absorb other people, their emotions? Do I have intuitive empathy?
When I read that part, we were sorting out who had which empathy. Mm-hmm. It's possible to have some of one and some of another, right? Like you could be a bit of both.
You can have. Yeah. So you're intuitive empathy.
Oh, Andy is 100% intuitive empathy. I'm more emotional empathy. We both have a bit of the cognitive empathy. Mm-hmm. And sorry, Ed, could you, and there is, I know there's one more. Let's get a full list of those four and what that looks like typically for anyone curious about your book.
Well, cognitive empathy is showing empathy with your thinking and your mind. Good thoughts. And then emotional empathy is, I feel your pain as you feel what's going on in somebody else. Intuitive empathy, you might get a gut feeling, a flash, a knowing, an image, a sense of energy. You might feel their energy in terms of going up or going down in your own body. And then spiritual empathy is just seeing the best in people and seeing their potential and how they can give to themselves and others more.
Yeah, in your description of the intuitive empath, I really saw Andy because Andy really just feels people's energy. This is something that we've only just recently been, you know, putting labels to be honest, he's always been like this, but he will just meet someone and just have a feeling about them. And whether it's in 1 week or in 1 year, he always ends up being right. He just has like a feeling about someone's energy or their chi, as you called it.
Yeah. You trust that?
Yeah. No, it's, I mean, someone said, you know, a friend of ours, acquaintance who works in the psychology field, essentially.
Yeah.
She said it comes from hypervigilance as a child often.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that could be. I mean, it might be associated with it, but, you know, it's also a gift.
Yeah.
You know, it's really a gift to be able to do that. And so for you to tune into other people, you know, you don't have to tell everybody what you get when you tune in. You know, that's not part of it.
Well, it helps me a lot. I'm grateful for it because it allows me to 99% of the time weed out people who I don't want in my life.
Well, it's also good for me because I'm not like that. I think now that you're talking about the spiritual one, I think I might have a bit of that. I have a tendency to, when I meet someone, see the best in them and or see them for what I want them to be or think they can be. And then I get burned a lot of the time because they don't end up being what I thought they might be. And so I feel like a little bit of protection from Andy.
Yeah. My one kryptonite is the occasional high-level malignant narcissist.
Oh, really?
It's a light weakness. Sometimes I can get sucked in, like twice in
like
my life.
Like so many.
Yeah.
Like so many. We'll get to that in a bit. I'm fascinated by what you said about how it's about tapping into the empathy that you're all the type that you already embody and not necessarily, you know, being a cognitive empath and struggling to become, for example, an intuitive empath. So in a relationship, let's say one partner is emotional empath and the other is cognitive empath. Let's say this is where you're kind of butting heads. You don't feel understood. You don't feel like you're receiving empathy in the way you want to by your cognitive empath partner. Is it kind of like a love languages thing where it's like, okay, well, I will adapt my expectations based like and trust that you feel for me based on like your other set of rules based on what type of empath you are? I don't know if that made any sense, but hopefully you understood my question.
Yes, but you can also teach your cognitive empath friend how to speak to you in the way that you would like. And you know, what cognitive empaths tend to do is they offer solutions too quickly. Now, if you're, let's say, expressing an emotion and you're wanting your partner to hear you, it's usually better not to offer a solution too quickly and to say, wow, you know, that really must hurt what happened, and give some time for the emotions to be expressed rather than too readily coming in and saying, oh, but you can call this one or you could go here or you should do this. That's, you know, the cognitive empath, the person can learn not to do that. So you have to educate your partner about your needs, and you do it in a really nice way. But I think that's part of being in a relationship. I know it certainly is for me. And my partner is an empath, which I love. I don't want to be with an empath because I have enough going on inside of me. And he's, you know, more grounded. He's like a rock. You know, he's like a rock. And we're driving along. And you know, I said, oh, what are you feeling about this? And he looks at me and he says, I'm not feeling anything. I'm driving.
Okay, so you balance each other out nicely then. So you never feel like you want more feelings or for him to sympathize or empathize more.
Well, he does sympathize and empathize. He just doesn't do it in the way I do it.
And that's okay.
Oh, yeah. It's preferable.
Okay.
I don't want someone to do it the way I do it. It's too much, too intense. Mm-hmm.
That's interesting. I mean, that's a pretty big takeaway because I think a lot of people would assume that if they're not receiving it in the way that they give it, then they're not feeling it as much. So what one of your suggestions then is to expand your definition of what it is to receive empathy from someone else.
Right. I know if someone's coming from their heart, no matter what their style is, you can feel that. And that's very nourishing.
So your book goes beyond just, you know, relating to each other in empathy. You really talk about empathy in terms of it being, like, as you said, a healing force, something that is as much for ourselves as for others. And I even love, you know, how you chose the word the genius of empathy, genius in your title. Mm-hmm. When your last empathy book was the empath's survival guide, which I think is more how people tend to think about empathy. It's like, oh, I'm so empathic, I need to survive this cold, hard world, you know, and then here's the genius of empathy. What are the pros to developing our own empathy?
Well, if you develop your own empathy, you develop self-empathy. And instead of beating yourself up all the time, like most people tend to do, you get in the habit of being kinder to yourself and giving yourself a break and speaking to yourself in a tender, loving voice rather than, you should have known better. You're so stupid. Why didn't you do that? You made a big mistake. You know, beat. Mm-hmm. And that's what people do. And so learning empathy allows you to say, I'm not going there. All right. It was a hard situation. You got through it. You did your best. You did a great job. You know, yay. And to be able to, you know, show yourself empathy and get into that habit.
Mm.
It's a habit, because people learn from their parents to beat themselves up, because most parents probably didn't have a whole lot of empathy, though some do, but they haven't thought about it all that much. You know, they have love, but, you know, they and thought about it. But I'm bringing empathy into the open and saying, who do you want to be? What do you want to believe in? How do you want to treat yourself? Mm. And if you want to beat yourself up, go, you know, continue on. But if you don't, there are other options that are much more pleasant and beautiful. And you can heal yourself with the loving thoughts. And if you're going through, let's say, a medical issue, you can't say negative things to yourself, because your body hears that and it will not promote the healing process. But if you're loving with yourself, if you're going through something hard, it will help you heal more quickly.
That's crazy.
Mm.
It really is. It's very powerful. You know, what we're talking about it kind of matter of fact, but it's a very powerful way to change your life. If you're tired of beating yourself up and you want to, you know, feel what it's like to be a healing person towards mm-hmm. yourself and to others. If you really can connect to yourself, empathy is the way to do it, a way to do it.
I love an analogy you use in the book when you talk about self-punishment, like when you beat yourself up, you relate it to an autoimmune disease where the immune system attacks parts of your own mm-hmm. body. And you're very passionate about self-empathy becoming like a daily practice.
Yes.
What are some tips you have for someone who, I mean, a lot of our listeners relate to us in their perfectionism. Mm-hmm. I know I struggle with people pleasing. And so it's hard not to, when I've done something wrong, really just, I can't let myself forget it for quite some time. So what would be some tips for someone like me who it just does not come naturally to me to just celebrate, you know, the things I do right and not punish myself for the things I did wrong?
Well, it's number one, mindful awareness of when you're doing it, so you can catch it early.
Mm.
To be able to say to yourself, I'm not going to go down that road. I'm going to go down a different road. Thank you for sharing. I'm going to talk to myself in this way. And instead of saying whatever you say to yourself ordinarily, you're going to say, let's just take a breath. Let's go for a walk. Let's go play and do something and take a break from this for a while and stop overthinking about it.
Mm-hmm.
And in that way, you're beginning to take the pressure off of yourself and the inner tension that can happen from, I didn't do it right. And if you didn't do it right, let's say you made a mistake. You know, I talk about that in the book. You forgive yourself. Everybody makes mistakes. We all make mistakes. And to be able to say, okay, I made a mistake and I owe this person an amends, so I'm going to go immediately and tell them I'm sorry. You see, you can always do that. And that's an amazing way to just keep energy moving forward rather than running scared. It's a different way of perceiving yourself, but you don't want to give that negative voice energy. And your mind, the negative voice, will come up with every reason not to show empathy for yourself and others, as it doesn't see any reason to do it. So that's why you have to shift into your heart so that you can be able to show empathy from your heart.
I love that. Like, it doesn't see any reason to do it. I find that very funny. There was a question we got that said, how can I make empathy work in a way that isn't ultimately to my disadvantage? I thought that was a fascinating question. It's a bit of a leading question, but it really made me smile because it shows a very popular perspective on empathy, which is that empathy is really ultimately hurting yourself. Like, you know, you're giving so much and what you're doing is just being sort of taken for in some way.
Right. You want like a cheap version of empathy. You want to get a good bargain.
But what you're saying is that it really starts with you. It's really, how can I make it work in a way that isn't ultimately to my disadvantage? Really, what you're saying is empathy for oneself could not be more advantageous for you.
Absolutely. And in relationship, you want to bring your best self to the person. You want to bring your loving self. You don't want to bring your wounded, you know, wound mate self, you know, going into a relationship. You want to bring your best self. And having empathy for yourself and having empathy for your partner, even if you don't agree with them, even if you're mad at them, if you come from that place, you're not at a disadvantage because you have tools in the book to set the limits and to say, when it's enough empathy, I'm tired, I got to stop. And you could control it. You're not just this kind of formless person without a will. You must have an inner dialogue that said, this is enough. You know, I do not want to talk to this person anymore. I know they want my empathy, but I'm done. I got to go. You know, so to be able to take care of yourself in that way, you see, that's advantageous. Mm. It makes you, I liken it to peaceful warrior training. You're being a warrior here, but you're just coming from a more zen-like place and very conscious of what you're doing. Now, everything I talk about in the book is there's a plan. Now, how do you show empathy in various situations? What are the resistances and what are the gains? What are the wins for it? And if you show empathy towards each other, you know, I really get how you're feeling. You know, that's very different than how can you feel that way? What are other people going to think? Or whatever you have in your mind. You know, it's very nice to show empathy to your partner, everyone listening.
Is that hypnosis?
It's a funny delivery. Someone asked how self-empathy relates to self-awareness, and I feel that you maybe just answered it. I reworded the question to be, is self-awareness a prerequisite to self-empathy? And when you touched on like the awareness of it, just becoming aware of it is the first step.
Yes, the awareness is so important. And being aware that it's up to you what you decide and what you choose. You don't have to go this route. But if you decide you want to try this and show a little empathy towards yourself or others and then see how you feel, you know, that you'll see what I'm talking about. And it's not a disadvantage. It's only a disadvantage if you become a doormat and you let people walk all over you. Mm-hmm. That's not at all what I'm suggesting.
What are some tips for someone who would describe themselves as an empath and they've been burned by a narcissist type, or as you call it, an empathy deficient disorder? What are some tips for spotting those people and protecting yourself from the get-go?
You know, the first step is to be aware of who you're interacting with. And if they're incredibly seductive or charismatic, that's often a sign, not always, but it can be, where you just get, if you can be seduced by words or, you know, oh, you're so wonderful, you're so this, you're so that, you know, it's called love bombing. Mm-hmm. And it's too much. You know, if somebody does that too much in the beginning, be a little wary of that, because narcissists use love bombing to reel people in. But once you don't do what they want you to do, then they become cold, withholding, punishing, gaslight you. They make you think you're crazy. You know, it's very hard to crawl out of these relationships. Mm-hmm. It's very hard. I've helped a lot of people do it over the years, and it's possible, but it has a lot of repercussions. If you just, oh, I found my soulmate, you know, and you know, they're a narcissist, they can be as soulmates.
That's a great quote. I found my soulmate and they're a narcissist.
Oh no, they're not a narcissist. And then what empaths say is, oh no, but I can heal them.
Yeah.
You know, next level. And that's not going to happen either because they have empathy deficient disorder. Be suspicious of too much charisma.
Yeah.
So it's very overrated.
The unfortunate thing about truly malignant narcissists is that you kind of have to get sucked in by one to fully be educated on what to avoid in the future. Because until you really see it, it's just like, you just can't imagine anyone would be like that.
I also am that kind of a learner. I learn from experience, and it's a rough way to learn, but you do get it. I mean, hopefully you do get it. However, some people keep coming back. They say, oh no, this one's different.
Yeah, I can rest assured that I will never go back to that.
One Shandy asked, how can I be empathetic to someone who hasn't struggled in life as much as me yet complains a lot? So thoughts on having empathy for people you think might not deserve it.
Mm. That's a good one.
Deserve it? Like who? Who wouldn't deserve it?
Oh, true empath here.
So in your view, there is no one not deserving of empathy.
Some degree of empathy. I mean, this argument starts with easier people and goes all the way up to the, you know, to really, really, really difficult people and why you would even want to do that, you know? So in terms of this question, though, this person deserves empathy. I mean, unless the person who asked the question feels like they're not a good person and they're hurtful or disrespectful, just because they do it a different way doesn't mean it's not valuable.
Yeah.
You need to appreciate what's good in people too.
But I also think there's a relativity. There has to be some relative understanding of empathy because one person's complaining situation is far different from another's.
Yeah.
One person might be like, I had one meal this whole week, and that really stinks. And I really would like more than one meal a week.
Yeah.
Another person's like, oh, there's only a 10% off sale at Bloomingdale's this Thanksgiving. Like, what's
but
that
it is
about?
Relative to that.
It's relative.
Experience.
Yeah. You have to understand the relativity.
I think it's a really good question. And I think it deserves further exploration. The person who asked that question, because is somebody not worthy of empathy? Do they have to do something in order to deserve empathy? Mm-hmm. No, or is empathy more about coming from where you're coming from?
Oh,
it's not- yeah.
Oh, that's an interesting thought. Mm. Okay.
Selfish empathy.
Oh, I don't know if we're going that far. Where is the line between empathy and enablement? This one came up a lot.
Well, enabling is when you do something to encourage a bad habit in someone, like you give somebody, $200 who's a heroin addict. Now, that's enabling them. They're not going to go get food with it. They're going to go get heroin. So, you're enabling them. Or if somebody, is in a relationship, if somebody is a victim type, and it's just poor me, poor me. And you keep asking about that. Oh, what happened to you this time? What happened to you this time? Then you're enabling them as opposed to saying, I think it would be really wonderful to start getting into solutions here. What are the solutions? Or if you want to just, go on about poor me, then I can only listen for a couple of minutes.
What if you're in a relationship that is it's inextricable, such as a parent or a child?
Oh, right.
And the parent and or child is a perpetual victim and is never willing to take any sort of advice on solutions that you know are accurate and helpful and will work.
Right.
So what do you do in a relationship where you are an empath, but extricating yourself from that relationship would make you feel like a very bad person?
Mm. Again, this is a theme that has come up in our conversation about all or none. It's either you talk to them or you get out of the relationship. It's like it's not all or none. If you have a parent who, is not going to change, basically, you have to grieve that you didn't have the kind of parent that you needed, because that person isn't going to change. And it's your choice how much you want to be with them, unless, of course, you're caregiving them or something like that. But, you can not expect them to change anymore. Just accept them for who they are. You have so many options. You could limit the time you spend with them. You could have other people there if you want to buffer the effect that they're having. You can give up the notion of trying to change them, which would be a big relief for you, if you had that, and to accept them for who they are. And it's not who you want them to be, but it's who they are. Mm-hmm. And if you can accept that, that takes some tension off of you. You don't have to ask them how they're doing too much. You don't have to bring it out in them. And you need to keep a little more distance, but it's about keeping your self-esteem intact around these people.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't go down the drain when you're around them because of something that isn't healed in yourself.
Right.
And so, this is a thought. How about having empathy for them and their inability to change?
That's high level empathy.
Yeah.
No, I'm not quite there yet. I'm close, but that's a goal.
But if they're stuck in the place that you're saying they're stuck in, it's kind of a no man's land.
Right.
It's not of the heart, but they're stuck in it.
Yeah. And, it's an empathy loop, because your empathy wants to solve the problem and make them happy, and they resist that. So yes. You just keep going. It's just, you can't get out of it, because you're like, I can do this. I can fix this. I have to fix this. They don't want to fix it. Why don't they want to fix it? I can try again.
But then that comes down to you and your boundaries.
Right. Then you have to set boundaries for your own expectations and just accept them, as you said, for who they are, and just, you know, live with that and be okay with that.
Right. That's exactly right. And to surrender your expectation that they will change.
Right.
So therefore you don't try and fix them. Mm-hmm.
That's one of the hardest things to do.
So tough.
True acceptance. That's the higher self right there.
That's the guy who wrote your foreword. Yeah, I think he may have done that.
Okay. Is there such a thing as too much empathy?
Yes, definitely. There's such a thing as too much empathy. If somebody doesn't want your empathy and you're showing all this empathy and they just want to be left alone, then don't do that to them, you know, or don't overgive, or don't keep checking on people and making them nervous, you know, that you could overdo empathy where it's more you're giving for yourself more than the other person, because you're feeling the need. You feel good when you give, and so you overgive. And people don't like that a lot of times. You know, they feel it's disrespectful. You know, you want to give a little empathy. You want to bowl someone over with your big heart. That's too much. People can't take too much of anything. You know, a little bit of this. Now, if I show empathy for you, you know, and I say, you know, I really see, you know, the journey you've been on with your heart, and it's really taking you to really amazing places, and you've really succeeded. Now, you say something nice to somebody, that's enough.
And you protect yourself at the same time.
Yes, yeah. Always. That's the whole idea of self-protection is part of empathy.
It's funny.
People experience compassion fatigue. They say, empathy is good, but what about when you just get exhausted or empathy overload? It's where you have to work with yourself. You're the decider. You're the one who's setting the boundaries and the limits. You know, you're learning to take care of yourself.
And you end up learning yourself. Because it's back to that self-awareness. What I'm hearing from you throughout this conversation is how much proportionate to how empathic you maybe are, you need to have a backbone to match.
That's right.
The size of your heart.
Exactly.
And that it's not all or nothing, like you said. You can be in small amounts and accepting that that is the amount necessary for whatever relationship this is. And the third piece that I am hearing is how important it is to not be conflict averse. Because in laying down that boundary, it sometimes might end up looking like a conflict to other people, but you can't be afraid of that, because that is part of laying down the boundary.
Well, you don't want to get into a conflict in terms of a huge conflict. You want to set the boundary. And if the person just doesn't understand it, you know, in the worst case scenario, you could just say, I'm so sorry, you don't understand this, but we can, you know, let's connect again. And maybe, you know, we can talk it out.
Oh, wow. She always makes it sound so easy. All right. Final question for you, Dr. Orloff, and then we will set you free. And I feel like this question, we only got it once, actually.
Oh, wow.
But I felt like it was very appropriate for our world today. Tips for empathizing with someone whose beliefs you fundamentally disagree with.
Well, I don't feel like you have to agree with everyone to have respect for them. You might not want them to be a friend or a trusted ally or a confidant, but I think we all deserve, you know, what I call the namaste effect. It's in India, when sometimes when they meet people, they say, namaste, I respect the spirit within you. May not like you, may not want to see you again, but namaste. So there's an element of respect even with your opponents. It's more of a Zen concept. You know, where you're about to enter into this fight, or this you respect, you bow to your opponent. You don't just hate them or go to war with them. You have a certain respect for other people. And so I was at a writer's festival yesterday speaking, and a man said, well, you know, I'm in Washington and all these people have these beliefs I don't agree with, and I can't take it anymore. What should I do? And you know, my response was, don't try and change them. Mm-hmm. And now just let them be. They're going to be themselves, and try and, you know, just say, I hear what you're saying and I'll take it under advisement. And that's that. You definitely don't want to get into a big discussion.
Mm. Yeah, or try to change each other's minds.
Mm. Yeah, no,
it feels like people default to nowadays.
Right. What's happening in our world now is that everything's polarized, where you're good or bad, or this one's, you know, going, you know, rather than coming together and integrating. And with empathy, I'm more in us all coming together and talking, you know, more, you know, than saying, well, this belief and that belief, because I've had the experience where I've talked to people, I just don't believe, I don't like their beliefs, or, you know, they offend me. And when I look at them and I say, you know, I hear what you're saying, you know, and thanks for saying that, and I'll think about it. You're saying to them, you hear them. Mm-hmm. And what people basically want is they want to be seen, they want to be heard, they want to be valued. And if you could give them any of that, then magic can sometimes happen with the softening on the other side.
Mm. I think that's a beautiful place. A soft place to wrap this conversation. Dr. Orloff, thank you so much for joining us today and sharing your wisdom with us.
You're very
thank
welcome.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Oh, man. Oh. There's a lot of food for thought in that one.
Oh, man, that's a good ear release.
Oh, yeah. Oh, always.
Oh, yeah.
It always feels, well, you have such cute ears. They're like thin. They really like... Yeah. Like, yeah, there's like a paperiness to your ears.
Is this a backhanded compliment?
No, I love your ears.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If my ears were one of my best features, would you be happy with that? Yeah, you don't like my ears.
Okay. I mean, that was interesting. I really underestimated going into this topic how powerful it is. How we speak to ourselves.
Yeah, well, that was the thing. I mean, I understand empathy to the world.
Yes.
I understand it deeply.
Yeah.
But empathy to myself and ourselves collectively is a totally different ballgame.
Totally. And she talks about it more in the book, and we didn't really touch on it much here, but she really talks about the like the scientific angle of that, about like the negative self-talk, and if you do have empathy for yourself, what that actually looks like in your, like, the ways it transforms your life. And it's kind of crazy. Like, it, you could argue that it's, you know, a little woo-woo, but it's really actually striking.
Yeah.
How the healing effect it can have, like, it, and it really does start with you. You know, the everyone always uses the example of putting on the mask on the plane on yourself helping the person next to you. And that really, to me, is the overriding message. Like, you would think this is more about your relationships with others, but this is mostly about your relationship with yourself, and then how that afterwards, how it extends to others.
And if you're empathetic with yourself, it'll be easier to be functionally empathetic with the world.
Yes. The boundaries.
Yeah.
That was the big thing. Cause I mean, so many of the questions we got were about how do I not get hurt? How do I not get burned? How do I not get used? How do I not all this? And you know, laying down a boundary for someone who doesn't like any kind of conflict, or like I talked about the backbone.
Or is deeply empathetic.
Yeah, or is deeply empathetic. She made it sound very simple. And I think that this is coming from someone who's extremely empathetic.
Well, the action is simple. The execution is incredibly difficult.
Well, and I feel like she's coming at it from the perspective of someone who's like spent her career writing on the topic.
I
like,
know
to her,
she does it.
Yeah.
But she's not one, everyone can do that.
Yeah, she's super clear on like, this is what you need to say. I'm going through this right now. I don't have time for that. Like, and it sounds so simple, but when she said it, it almost took my breath away. Like the friendship breakup from the platonic friendship.
Well, that's the thing for me. If I get to that point, I'm just suddenly gone. Like, same. I can't have the conversation. I just leave.
Yeah. And I love too how she's pointed out, she was like, this is a recurring theme in this conversation, the all or nothing.
Yeah.
Why does it have to be all or nothing?
Right.
And it's true. Like, why not give the friendship a chance by giving the person enough credit where you can lay down a boundary and see whether or not they really cannot respect
the problem with empaths, and I know because I know myself, is that we think that the person we're talking to is as fragile empathetically as us. So we're worried about, you know, we wouldn't want them to say it to us.
Yeah, but if they said it to us, we'd be totally fine with it.
Oh, I don't know how fine I'd
be with it. If a friend said that to me, I would be like, oh my God, well, like I overstepped.
I'd be upset for weeks though. I'd be thinking, I'd be dreaming about it.
Yeah, but you'd be upset that you hurt that person. You wouldn't be upset for yourself.
No, but I'd be upset for everything. Everyone would be upset. Me.
Just generally upset.
Yeah, everything.
No, I think that you're not giving yourself enough credit. I think that if someone did that with you, said, I'm laying down a boundary. You know, the problem is that you don't do that.
No, I never do that. I feel guilty. I feel guilty if I even talk about myself for more than like 3 minutes.
I know. Like attracts like. Yeah. I've decided I'm reaching the stage of my life where I am befriending people where I don't even need to have that conversation.
I am doing Minority Report on those people. I'm precogging them.
But you know, I what she's saying is there's something to salvage here. Why is it all or nothing? Why is it black or white? Give the person a chance. Yeah. It's interesting. It's, you know, the overriding theme is a taking of responsibility for yourself.
Yeah.
For your own empathy. You know, it's a gift and it's also something to manage. It needs to be like corralled.
Yeah. Practice what you preach. Uh-huh. Simply.
Yeah.
Just treat yourself as you would expect others to treat you. Wait. Treat others as you would like to be. Well, the Bible, whatever it says. I don't know. Treat others the way you want to be treated. Something to that effect. I'm paraphrasing.
Yeah.
But also treat yourself like you would like
others to treat you.
Yes. Yeah. Simply, you just reverse it.
Yeah. And, you know, she touched briefly on, you know, forgiving someone. When someone messes up, how, you know, I was thinking, wow, it's so much easier.
Do unto others as you would expect them to do unto you. I knew someone would comment. This is what you're talking about. I got it. Nice try.
Under the wire, you got there, yeah. It slid Indiana Jones style. Yeah.
They were just timing. They're like, well. Oh, okay. I forgot it.
They were just about to hit send on it. But unless they paused. If they paused, then that comment's there.
There may be two comments. It may be that the quote you're looking for is this. And then the next comment is I just heard the next part of the podcast. I feel bad now.
Okay. The only reason we say this is because it's happened.
Yeah. Moving on.
What were we talking about?
We were talking about do unto others as you would do unto yourself.
No, there was something else.
That's not the quote either.
No, I remember what I was going to say was the forgiving of people. Like it's so much, I find it, if a friend screws up, I am so much more forgiving with them than I am with myself.
Of course.
Well, but that's not
a good
way
to be. No, it's not good.
Yeah.
I know, of course, yes, because I do that too, but it's not good.
And I think that sometimes if you are an empath and you haven't really expanded your mind in this way, you know, I think it can be easy to see it as like your pride. You kind of take pride in being that selfless, that much of a martyr.
Yeah,
I know that because I've been that way myself. It's like, oh, it's like you're so apologetic that it's like, oh, well, this is the way one should be. Yeah. You know, but actually that what's in it for you or anyone? You know, I really appreciate there's like a strong, like I said, backbone place where comes from.
You have to be, it's a paradox. You have to be tough and soft at the same time.
Yes. Yes. You have to be tough to be soft.
Yeah. You have to be soft to be tough. Maybe just the other way around.
Okay.
I think the bottom line is that everyone to fully enjoy and appreciate life should have empathy.
Yes.
You know, not too much and not, you know, misguided empathy and mm-hmm. not, you know, lacking self-empathy, but having massive amounts of outward empathy. But if you don't exhibit empathy in life, you know, they'll say ignorance is bliss.
Yeah.
To an extent, but you're not living life to the fullest. You need to have empathy. That's part of human existence.
Yes, it's part of being a human.
Yeah. Narcissists totally. Are not happy. They may seem happy.
No,
I know
not.
They are deeply deeply unhappy.
Yeah, no. It's
and they're true. Unhappy, but their heart is completely closed off. It's a black, crusty little bitch.
The formal definition.
Yes. Not sure those words have ever been spoken before.
I want to read one quote before we wrap because this really stood out to me. She talks about the small and large self. Mm-hmm. To develop empathy, the first step is to understand that we each have a small and large self. The small self is limited to the personality level where your ego, intellect, and emotional struggles dominate, and the large self is ruled by the heart. The small self is strong on logic and analyzing situations, which are both great assets, but the mind can be both a friend and an enemy. It is also prone to insecurity, arrogance, pride, fear, and anxiety, and lacks the tools to rise above them. Thus, the small self has a restricted vision of what's possible.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A large self, the heart.
You know what the theme of all of this can be is be strong and lead with your heart.
Yeah.
That's it. Oh, that's it, just Andy. Life.
Oh, that sounds like a poster that's like mass produced.
No, you put it in your kitchen.
Yeah.
It's like a wood engraving.
Oh, no. I was thinking like a person walking down a path that had trees on either side. There's like a sunset in the background.
Oh.
And the quote's like in italic.
Oh, yes. That too.
Yeah.
Or something you put in your kitchen and people are annoyed by. Either way, good words to live by.
Yeah, but maybe those people, you know, need to look inwards.
Yeah, maybe you can put that on your wall and the people who come in and are annoyed by it, you can assume are psychopaths.
Stop being so all or nothing, Andy.
Black and white is so satisfying.
Yeah. Well, that's what people want. People want a black or white answer.
Yeah.
It's like when we're talking about the relationship, how do I get my partner to empathize with me in the way I want to be empathized with? It's like everyone wants this magic bullet. Like all or nothing, this is what I do, and then I get my way. This is how we are now.
Well, and now some people are forcing. They think it's like on vogue to virtue signal.
Yes.
So it's just like, I have empathy. Look at my empathy. Look at what I'm doing.
Yeah.
You see this?
Yeah.
You don't have more empathy than you.
Okay. Well, Andy, I think then that's a wrap. For all this right. episode,
yeah.
I learned something new.
I also learned many new things. Yeah. I learned more new things about empathy than you because... I have more empathy.
It was close.
Done.
If you enjoyed what you heard today, you know what we will ask of you, and that is to like, subscribe, hit the notification bell, follow us on Instagram and
TikTok,
leave us Apple and
Spotify
podcast ratings and reviews, tell your friends, and generally do all the things you would do to support a podcast you enjoy. Thank you so much for tuning in, and we'll see you next time on Dear Shandy. Bye-bye.
Everyone is talking about magnesium. It's all you hear about. But why? What do we know about magnesium? Well, magnesium is the number one mineral that 75% of Americans are deficient in. If you are a woman over 35, magnesium will help you rediscover balance, energy, and vitality. Magnesium supports more than 300 enzymatic reactions in your body, including those involved in hormonal balance. From functional medicine doctors to mental well-being and female hormone experts, we all know that magnesium is the one mineral to improve all aspects of well-being and health. But which one? Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, the trusted choice recommended by leading experts, with 7 best-absorbed forms of magnesium to ensure your body receives the support it needs for overall well-being. Go to bioptimizers.com/balance today and use code BALANCE10 for 10% off. Support your journey to wellness at bioptimizers.com/balance. Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, your foundation to optimal health and vitality.